Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former professional runner. Today's guest is professional runner for Saucony, Grayson Murphy. Grayson was a five-time D1 All-American while at the University of Utah. She went on to run professionally right out of college, and since college has won 2 World Mountain Running Championships. She's the 5-time U.S. Mountain Running Champ. She was a 6th-place finisher in the steeplechase at the 2021 Olympic Trials. Grayson is also the owner and founder of Wild Strides Paper Co., a company that sells training logs and stationery for runners and also now provides coaching. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Grayson. Grayson, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here today. You've been just a dominant force in so many different areas of distance running, and you've had a recent health journey that, you know, I'm excited for listeners to hear about. I think sharing those experiences, as hard as it can be, is just so helpful for other people going through them. So I just appreciate how candid you've been and how open you've been.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been fun mostly to share the journey, and yeah, I like trying to be vulnerable and open and hope that it inspires other people to do that too.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's not an easy thing to do, but I feel like as runners, we have some practice with that. I feel like getting on a start line is pretty vulnerable in and of itself.
Yes, definitely. It does kind of feel like a race a little bit.
Yeah, it can be kind of exposing, but sometimes in a good way.
Yeah, and I think it's helped me not, like, live, I don't know, the shame lives in, like, quietness, and it's helped me to just talk about it, and then you don't feel, like, embarrassed or shameful about what's going on, and there's, like, literally hundreds of people that will reach out saying, oh, the same thing is going on with me, and then you feel so much less alone, which is so nice.
Yeah, absolutely. All it takes is one voice. So I love that you're being that voice, and I'm excited to get into it. And I want to start with having you tell us a bit about yourself. Who is Grayson? Tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into running.
Okay. Let's see. I am originally from Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm really close with my family. I have a twin sister and we're really close. She's my best friend. Yeah, I think growing up, we were just really active kids. We played sports, but we also just kind of were outside all the time, like on our bikes and running around. So that's kind of who I've always thought of myself as, and just like very active in general. And when I label myself, if I have to, I'd say I'm an athlete. Like I almost never say I'm a runner. I would never introduce myself that way. But yeah, so it's been fun. And I did not run growing up outside of like running around the playground or in ball sports. So then I played soccer all through high school and then my freshman year of college. And then just kind of was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I transferred schools. And when I transferred, I was like, well, I want to try a new thing. And I still want to be on a team because I really like that team dynamic. So I asked the track coach if I could try out or walk on, and they were like, sure. yeah, and then the rest is kind of history. I walked on and had kind of a steep learning curve into college running and then finished as a 5-time All-American at Utah, transferred again back to Utah. Yeah, so that's kind of a whirlwind of a college career, and transferring twice isn't super typical, and yeah, it just was like kind of a roller coaster, but it was really fun. And if you had asked me when I was 18 starting college, or if you had told me where I'd be in 4 years finishing college, I'd be like, there's no way. Like, I don't even like running. There's no way I'm going to be doing that. So it's kind of cool.
That's crazy. So I knew that you were a college soccer player initially, but I didn't know that you hadn't even run before that.
Nope. Yeah. Me and my sister did one track meet once because our friends dared us to do it. Because we'd always win like the PE mile. So our friends were like, go do a race. And then we did it and we hated it. And we were like, we're never doing that again. Yeah. So I had not run till outside of the soccer field until I started in college. And it was a cool experience. I would do it again if I could.
That's amazing. So, what made you decide when you quit soccer? What made you decide on running?
Well, the school I transferred to is a D1 school, so it was like feasibly the only sport that I could walk onto with zero experience might be running. Yeah, so that was kind of my reasoning. And then I also thought, like, well, I don't want to join a sorority, so how else am I going to make friends here? And then I thought, well, maybe this team will be like a good chance to do that, and I get to still be active and play sports, and it'll just be cool. So, yeah, cool to take a chance on something new.
That's amazing. And you obviously it paid off for you and for the school. What was that conversation with the coach like? I'm so curious. Like, hey, can I walk onto the team? I've never run before.
Messaged them and I was like, I was playing soccer at this other school. We did do like a 5K time trial maybe or something, so I had like some time to tell them. And then I'd had my 800 time from high school the one time when we got dared to run it. So I was like, I have these two times and I think I'm fast. Like, I'm usually fast on the soccer field, so can't be too bad. And then they were like, oh, that actually works great because there's actually this guy that we want to let on the team. But for Title IX, we're already like down in numbers. So if we add you, then we can have the guy that we actually want. So I think it was like pretty lucky actually that this guy wanted to be on the team that I got a spot to.
Wow, that's amazing. So, when you first joined the team, what did your transition into running look like? Like, I know now you run a lot of miles, but what was that transition like? Did you like, what was your first experience with even weekly mileage?
Yeah, so the first week, I remember being in call, well, in the first school, so I hadn't transferred yet, but I thought, okay, I should run like 1 mile a day, and if I can do that for a week or 2 weeks, then maybe I'll run 2 miles a day. And it was like very slow, and I had a calendar, and I'd like mark it off and be like, yes, I ran a mile a day for 2 weeks. That was so cool. And then I vividly remember my first day of practice at the new school and my first running practice, and they were like, we're gonna run for 1 hour today. And I was like, excuse me? Like, that is so long. I run for like maybe 20 minutes. Like, I think my mileage PR at that point was I'd run 3 miles in one go at one time. And
Wow.
so I think I made it 45 minutes with the girls, and then I came back and I was like, I think I should be done now. Like, that was a lot. So yeah, very steep learning curve, but it came quickly, and I had really cool coaches and teammates, and they all like told me what shoes to get, and like I need a watch so that I can keep track of the time and the miles. And yeah, it was cool. It was fun to be like completely new to something.
Yeah, that's so impressive that you just like took that on. I feel like you and I both, I was a walk-on as well, and just like walking on is, it's really intimidating. And it was intimidating for me having run for 2 years in high school, so I can't even imagine like how much courage that took to just go for it.
Yeah, I think now I might, maybe ignorance is bliss. Like back then, I was like, I have no idea like how even bad I am. So I'm just gonna walk on.
That's amazing. I would say the same thing about walking on to CU. Like, I didn't know much about the program, and like historically speaking, it's been a powerhouse in the NCAA. And if I had known what I know now, then I probably would have been too scared to walk on. So I really relate to that.
I had no idea that you walked on too.
Yes, I
That's
did my
cool.
sophomore year. I took freshman year off of running and then missed the sport and came back. So I was in a similar position to you where I was like one of the slower ones on the team and like kind of lowest mileage by far and really adjusting. So I fully relate to your story. And I love that you ended up becoming a five-time All-American. That's so incredible. When did it first click for you that, oh, I could be really good at this or I like this? What did that look like?
Honestly, it was like the very first race. It was cross country because I also learned very quickly that if you're on the track team for distance, you're also on the cross country team. And so, yeah, we started cross country in the fall and we had our first meet, and I ended up being the first runner for our team. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was like pretty fun. And I really
Wow.
enjoyed that. And it seems like it's coming pretty naturally. And then, like, every week there were like these big leaps and bounds and improvement, and that was pretty cool to just have like constantly improving. And every race I would PR, which got to be really fun. So yeah, I think it was kind of that first race and that whole first season. I was like, this is cool. Like, I just keep getting better and better.
That's so fun. It's always the beginning of running is the most fun because you PR by like a minute just by learning how to race, which is the best. That's amazing. So, having no real background in running and being in a team sport, I'm curious, what was your first experience that you can remember with fueling, or when did you know that there was a connection between nutrition and performance?
This actually dates back to before I started running, but when I was in high school, I developed kind of a disordered eating habits, and it got to where my college or soccer coaches and my parents, they all sat me down and they were like, "You can't do this. Like, if you want to be Mia Hamm, like, you can't act this way because it's so important that you're fueling your body if you want to be doing athletics like this and keeping it strong." And then I was kind of like, yeah, whatever, like kind of a high school kid. But they threatened to like take soccer away if I wasn't committed to fueling properly. So I kind of tried. And then what really kind of slapped me in the face more was when I was trying to get recruited for soccer for college, and I had a lot of college coaches being like, we're really interested, but you're really small, and we're not interested in that because we need you to be strong and not like get hurt on the field with all these other women that are gonna be a lot bigger than you. And that was kind of interesting. I think about that a lot because actually, I'm like not much bigger than I was. I'm not like a big person, I'm just like kind of that's just like my size. So that was an interesting point, because I think it pulls in the whole like you're trying to make body types fit certain sports as well, which is like a whole other conversation. But I did feel like I got the point that fueling was important from all of that, and that if I wanted to be competitive in sports, like it was important to be fueling my body for those activities. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting because most runners have the opposite experience where someone tells them they need to be smaller, and you had the experience of saying you were too small.
And then it was, I'm kind of glad I had that experience, because then in my first year of college soccer, it was constantly like they were trying to get me bigger, and it was like lots of weight room stuff and lots of eating, and that made me feel like physically uncomfortable because it was like overeating all the time, and it wasn't very fun. So then I go to college running the next year, and I start hearing, "Oh, you're built like a runner." And I was like, "What is this? Like, this is so messed up. Like, the other sport just told me I wasn't built for this, and now this sport is saying I am." And so I'm glad I had that experience to begin with, because it made me realize, like, oh, this is so like just a perception issue in the sports, and I could just be in any body, I think, and do either sport. I don't think it matters as much as they're making it matter. So yeah, it was like a roundabout way to having like a good perspective on it by the time I got to running.
Yeah, that's such a unique perspective, I think, hearing it from the other way, coming into the sport. And it's true, I think a lot of runners struggle with feeling like they are, quote unquote, not a runner because they don't look, quote unquote, like a runner. And like you just said, there shouldn't be such a thing as like typecasting people in the sport based on how they look. I think I tell people, like, if you have a body and you run, you have a runner's body. But there is still this like stigma around you need to look a certain way or be a certain size to be a runner.
Yeah, and I've even seen that perpetuated into the professional level, unfortunately. And it just sucks because it's like, oh, can we ever get away from this? And can we ever move on? I will say in trail running, it is much better than in road and track. But again, like it's nice that I've had these experiences in different areas, because then I have perspective. So when I'm confronted with that, like, body image stuff, I'm like, oh wait, I remember this from the other time, and I'm gonna draw on that experience.
Yeah, for sure. What are some ways you feel like you have drawn on that experience while you were still in the track running world?
I think I've always been, like, I lifted really heavy even in high school and college, so I think that was something that I took forward with me in running in college, and that was helpful, and knowing that, like, having muscles is good and makes me feel strong and powerful, and I don't want to be, like, so underfueled that I don't have muscles anymore. So that was probably the biggest thing that I've taken through all of that.
Yeah, and the avenues of running that you have pursued require so much strength. The steeplechase, climbing mountains, all require you to be really strong and really fueled.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, even fueling, like, on a trail run versus a road run versus a track workout. It's all a little bit different. So having those perspectives and experiences too, I think, has made me stronger in general and just, like, more aware of how fueling impacts the activity that I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you went, you transferred to Utah, second time you transferred to a D1 school, and you were an All-American multiple times there. Did anything shift for you with fueling as you kind of transitioned out of soccer and having that kind of environment where you were encouraged to be eating more and lifting more and doing all of that?
It allowed me to eat more intuitively, which I felt like was nice because then I wasn't always force feeding myself. So that was quite nice. And then by the time I got to the second two schools, I wasn't on, like, a dining hall plan or anything. So then it was learning how to cook for myself. And especially by the time I got to Utah, I had it pretty dialed, where I could know what I could make on, like, Sunday night, and then that would last me for most of the week, and it would be, like, a rotisserie chicken. Like, I didn't even have to cook the chicken, it was already cooked, and then I could get rice and hummus and all this stuff and just make bowls, and so that was kind of nice, because I figured out, like, how to do that efficiently and still get the nutrients that I need to perform.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That actually sounds really good too. A rotisserie chicken bowl with rice and hummus. Yum. That sounds amazing. Take notes, anyone who's listening. So I want to hear about your transition into professional running. But before we get there, do you have any last kind of pieces of advice or wisdom to share with an athlete who might be listening, struggling with feeling like they're not happy in their sport, they're looking for a change?
You always have a choice, I would say. And just because you even grew up one way doesn't mean that that's how you have to continue. Like, no one in my family runs, so they definitely thought it was crazy to start running by choice. But I think that it's cool to just try new things. And, like, the worst that could happen is you don't like it and then you try something else. But the best that could happen is, like, maybe you get really good at it and you really like it. So it's a win-win. And, yeah, don't be afraid to try new things.
That's amazing advice, and I totally agree. You have so much more to gain by going for it than you do to lose by going for it. And, like I know you're similar to me in that, like, that set up my whole life. Like, that's how I found my career and built my business and made lifelong friends, like, because I made that choice to walk on. And, like, yeah, it could have gone the other way, but it didn't. And giving yourself that opportunity to just know, I think, is huge.
Yeah, agreed.
I love that. And it gave you the opportunity to go on and run professionally. So you signed a professional contract with Saucony. Was it right out of college, or what was that transition like?
I was with NAZ Elite for a year first. So that was with Hoka. And then it just wasn't the right fit for me. I didn't feel like in the team. And at that point, I'd only been running for 5 years. So it was just a lot to be in that team environment and still be so new to the sport. And I didn't even know, like, what workouts do I like? What do I respond better to? What kind of running do I like? So I chose to leave after a year, went home. That's when I started trail running that first year, and won my first national title. then got signed with Saucony. So I was unsponsored for about 4 months in between, and then went on to Worlds and won my first world title that year. So it was kind of a whirlwind, another whirlwind of a year, but it was fun. And then I've been with Saucony ever since.
That's such a good point. I've never thought of it that way. Like, your career at that point had been so short in the grand scheme of things when you become a pro. Like, that's crazy to think how high your ceiling is, because you're still like so relatively new to the sport when you think about women who've been in the sport for like 20 years. Like, the amount of growth you can experience is just exponential.
Yeah, and I was in college too. I'm lucky I had coaches, and they were always reminding me, like, you're 21, but your training age is 2. So we need to be like really careful with you. And I ran low mileage in college, and it was cool to just have that recognized. And even this is my 10th year running ever, and 5 of those have been as a pro. So it's been just like a weird mix. I'm finally more pro than I was college, which is nice.
That's awesome. And I love that you took your time building up mileage. So that's something else I would say, if you have any words of wisdom for anyone listening. I struggle sometimes with platforms like Strava. I think they can be really fun and a great way to connect runners, but I also think that I see younger runners feeling like they have to be doing so much, and there's this pressure to do all this mileage and hit certain mile splits. Like, it's embarrassing to post a slow run. And like, I'm just curious, as someone who took your time building up, what can you say to an athlete who feels like they're behind?
First of all, I would say I still get that too. Like, I'll definitely still go on Strava and be like, oh, so-and-so ran faster than me today, or further, or more vert, and now I feel bad about my run. So that's something I feel too. But I would also say I was maybe better about it in college, because I didn't have Strava then. But it was like, just focus on me and what I'm doing. And if I'm improving still in races and I'm winning races, like, what does it matter how many miles a week I'm running outside of those races? If I'm beating girls running more miles, then sucks for them that they had to run more miles to get the same result. And so I try and remind myself, don't get greedy. That was something my first coach told me, and I think that's a really good thing to remember, is like, just because you can do more doesn't mean you should. And I've always thought the most you could do, like the most efficient you could be, is really valuable. Like, why would you run 100 miles a week if you could run 80 and get the same result? Like, efficiency is key too, I think. So I try and keep that in mind.
Yeah, super good advice. And yeah, I was the same way. I was pretty low mileage. It took me a long time to build up to a decent mileage. And I think that's a really big reason why I was able to have minimal injuries throughout my career. So yeah, like you said, there's a lot to be gained. More is not always more. Sometimes less is more. Yeah, and you did end up finding a kind of different avenue, unique avenue of running, with mountain running and trail running. So how did you find that? What was that transition like? Because you were so new to the track, and then you end up on the trails. So how did you find the trails?
I'd always kind of thought, well, I hiked a lot as a kid, so I always really liked trails. And then I started to think, why couldn't I run on them if we walk on them all the time? And it sounds cool. So I'd done a handful of trail runs. And then it's nice that in Salt Lake, the Cirque series, they have like 4 races a year nearby. And for people that are unfamiliar with it, it's they're mountain races. So they're like 9 miles or less. And they are quite steep, but they usually take an hour to hour and a half for the front people. And yeah, so they're not ultras at all. And I was like, well, what's an hour? Like, I could do an hour. So on my birthday, that first year out of Hoka, I went and did a Cirque series race and ended up getting 2nd. And I was like, that was so cool. And I had so much fun. And just the vibe is cool. The people are a little bit different vibe than like a road race or a track race. And I was kind of hooked, so kind of followed that path, and then looked into it more and was like, oh my gosh, there's like a U.S. championship this year, I could go do that, and then won that, and then it's like, oh, I'm going to Worlds now for this, and I was fast track to mountain running, but it's really cool. And before that, I didn't know that trail running could be anything other than ultras, and I feel like it's better now, but still a lot of people think like trail running means ultra running and you're running 100 miles, which is not the case. There's shorter races for those of you like myself that don't want to run 100 miles yet.
Yeah, that's a lot of miles to run in one go for sure. And for anyone who's not familiar, can you tell us a little bit about the difference between just like a trail race and then a mountain race?
Okay, yeah. So the classic mountain discipline is 15K or shorter, so that's 9-ish miles or less, and then it's usually just like one climb and one descent, and you can't use poles. That's a fun fact that I feel like people don't know all the time. And it's usually just more steep than a trail race. I think if you hear like trail race, you should be thinking maybe a little bit more runnable, or it's an ultra. The terms are not, they're loosely defined, but yeah, mountain racing for sure is like short and steep and fast.
Okay, so I always watch videos of the mountain runners like doing these insanely fast paces down a rocky cliffside. What is that like? Have you fallen before? Or how do you avoid falling in those situations?
I have not fallen in a race, knock on wood. I've fallen a couple times in training, but never like going to the hospital or stitches or anything. It's pretty fun. I think that's why I like it. It's a little bit of an adrenaline rush and it's kind of scary, but in a fun way. Yeah, at Worlds, I remember looking down at my watch and I was running like 4:25 pace on the downhill. And I'm like, this is faster than my mile PR. And it's just like scary. And it's also cool because I think people think trail running, you're just going really slow all the time. And mountain running is like pretty quick. Quicker than my mile PR.
Wow. I had no idea that you're able to run that fast down a cliff face.
Yeah. It's a controlled fall. Yeah.
It's a good way to put it. Yeah. And something that you've been, I would say, like maybe viral for is the airplane arms on your run. Something I love about what you share on social media is having fun with your runs and not taking yourself so seriously. What can you speak to about making running fun? How do you make it fun while still making it something that you're serious and you care about?
I think I go back to why I started running, which was to have friends in college and avoid joining a sorority. And I always think of like that version of myself and why she chose to start running, and I want to honor that. And she didn't start running because she wanted to run professionally. She didn't even know what that was. So I want to make sure that like that piece of me is still inside and gets honored. So I do airplane arms. Airplane arms, are you doing it wrong? Because it's like, if you're not having that much fun when you're out there, like you're not doing it right, because I think it should be that fun. Maybe not every run, but a couple times a week at least, you should be feeling like it's pretty fun to be out there.
I feel like that's such a unique difference between like track and road racing and then trail racing. And yeah, tell us a little bit about like the difference for you in terms of training and just like even fueling. There's a huge difference between those two. Can you speak to some of those differences?
Yeah, training's interesting. With mountain running, you can kind of get away with training more like a 10K or half marathon road or track runner. So that's kind of how I've trained for the last 5 years until pretty much this year when I decided to jump up in distance. But that part was nice because I could still do track workouts all the time and pretty much be like road and track ready at any point. And then you just sprinkle in more trail stuff and more vert. So that's been pretty nice. So the training piece is, at least for mountain training, like not as different as most people expect. But then the fueling piece, that was quite different because 10 miles on a trail could take 2.5 hours, whereas 10 miles on the road, you might be out there for 70 minutes. Like, fueling for that is different. And then on top of just the time difference, which could be over double, the amount of power or like watts, if you think of like a bike, you're putting out on a trail is a lot higher than a road run. So then you're burning more energy as well, even though your pace might be significantly slower. So getting all that straight, my first year was took some trial and error, and I would be on trail runs and just be like so hungry because I didn't bring enough. And I thought like, oh, it's an 8 mile run, like an hour, and 2 hours later I'm like, I'm starving. So yeah, big differences. And I think too, what I realized my first year of trail running, you like use your brain a lot more in trail running because you have to be watching the trail and not tripping and just be engaged more. Where in road running, you can kind of shut your brain off and I don't know, autopilot. So I think that burns a lot more fuel too, because I would just be like, why am I so hungry 30 minutes into this? So yeah, lots of differences.
Yes, for sure. And mental focus requires more carbs, for sure. So you're absolutely right about that. We see like a decrease in coordination and mental focus as people are under fuel. They don't have enough carbs. So for trail running, especially and mountain running, huge disadvantage if you're experiencing that. Yes, I would imagine. Yeah. So I'm curious, what was your first experience like fueling during a run? Because I feel like in college, that was not something we did. And even my first few years as a pro, like, it probably took me a while to be like, I should probably be having a gel or two on my long runs. Like, when did you first realize, oh, I should probably fuel during my runs?
It took an embarrassingly long amount of time because I think I was so indoctrinated too in mostly the road side of things. But like, no one was, they were drinking maybe some water in my first year as a pro, but no one was like having food. And in college, it was like, go out for your 2 hours and come back and have some water. So, yeah, it took too long, probably. I think it was really the trail stuff and then training with more trail people and learning from them. And my husband's a Nordic skier and they're like much better at fueling themselves and they're much better at running in like zone one and zone two and just like keeping the effort lower. So training with them a bit too, I started to pick up some stuff. But it really hasn't been until the last year and a half maybe where I've been like more diligent about it and trying to fuel even on easy runs. Like today I just did like an easy hour 40 and I still had over 100 calories plus like drink mix and enough water. So yeah, it's taken too long probably, but I'm getting there.
I mean, that's better late than never, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that you said you just fueled on an easy run. I think people really need to hear that. It's not always about effort. It's about time on your feet. And we deplete our muscle glycogen stores. We start digging into those pretty early on, like after about an hour. So if you're getting in an easy run that's an hour 40, adding in fuel, yeah, you could finish the run without it, but like at what cost? I think that's kind of the big thing with trail running, mountain running is like you need that power. Like you said, I love that analogy of like think about it like a bike. Like your output is so much higher even though you're running slower, and it's only an advantage if you have more fuel on board.
Yeah, and you notice. I mean, as soon as I started fueling easy runs, you notice, oh, I'm recovering quicker. Like the next day doesn't feel as bad either, because now I didn't have this like deficit to make up after the run with my breakfast after, and during the run is better. And I always kind of wondered, how do people run 100 miles? And then when I started fueling, I was like, oh, they're just fueling, like, to be able to run for 16 hours, like that's how.
Yes, exactly. The more you fuel, the more you can run. So if you're trying to run more, you also need to fuel more. Yeah, that's incredible. What are some of your approaches to fueling on the trail? What are some of your favorite things to have with you on your runs?
I've been trying some different things. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease in February, and that made a lot of things make sense. But because of that, I've had to try a lot of different gels and stuff to see like what works better. And honestly, like the Mott's What are they? Fruit snacks? Yeah.
Yes, those are like, so good.
So good. They go down so easy. I wouldn't take those in a race, but I had some today on my easy run, like where you're not breathing as hard and you can chew and swallow a little bit easier. But I like the Sis gels too. They're pretty liquidy. I like Spring Energy. I know that they got like a bad rap, but I like that it's rice because it feels more filling than some of the maltodextrin stuff based gels. And then Drink Mix has been like a nice way to get in extra calories without feeling like it's like filling your stomach really. And you can just like be sipping on it. You don't have to drink the whole bottle all at once. So that's nice. Yeah, so it's been kind of evolving. Yeah, but lots of options.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about like sports nutrition is always evolving. There's always new products. There's always new things out there. So yeah, don't be afraid to try new things and look for new things for sure. And speaking of Crohn's disease, that was kind of your big thing that you've been sharing a little bit recently. Tell us a little bit about that process of getting diagnosed. How did you actually get your diagnosis? How long did that take for you to figure out that's what was going on?
Yeah, so I guess probably it's been about 10 years total. Wow. And 10 years ago, I was having stomach problems, but it happened to coincide with when I started running. So the doctors were like, you have runner's trots. It's fine. Or you just have IBS. And so for 10 years, I have thought that that is like what I had. And for the most part, it was like manageable. I just needed like extra bathroom stops compared to everyone else. And my teammates just had to get used to it. But it was fine until about 2 years ago. I think maybe just like the culmination of increased training and racing and just for 8 years, like being kind of in a deficit now that I know, it kind of came to a head and I had the symptoms just got like out of control. So then for about 2 years, I struggled. I only raced 4 times in the last 2 years just because couldn't really train that much. Couldn't recover from anything. I couldn't even recover from easy runs at the end. And I was just like, what is going on? Doctors couldn't really figure it out. Got told it's anxiety or it's just in your head a whole bunch. So then started to believe them, which sucked. And yeah, it was like just really difficult to keep going and had to keep pulling out of races. I had race directors getting mad at me, but I couldn't tell them what was wrong because I didn't have a diagnosis. And I don't even want to know like what they thought of me then. But yeah, it's been a journey. So then in February, things got like pretty bad, but it's kind of a blessing in disguise. And I got some emergent procedures done finally. And then they were like, oh, it's this, like, obviously. And I was like, what? Within like a matter of a week, it went from like, we don't know what's wrong to it's definitely this. And here's some medicine that's going to help you. And yeah, so it's been a long journey, but it's been nice to share, and I'm feeling much better now. Modern medicine is great, and I am very thankful for that, and it's helping a lot. So I'm really glad that I'm kind of moving out of, I think I was unintentionally like in a REDS situation as well, because I didn't know that I wasn't absorbing pretty much anything, and no wonder like I felt so bad and couldn't recover from anything. So body is coming back finally, I think.
Wow, what a long journey to think that 10 years ago you had your first symptoms. And I see this all the time with athletes struggling with gut issues. They're told it's, you just have runner's gut, you have IBS. And like, it's not normal to have to stop on runs all the time for the bathroom. It's not normal to have pain all the time or like have bathroom issues all the time. Like, that's not normal. And it's hard when medical professionals are telling you that it is. They're kind of like gaslighting you into thinking that it's in your head, which you spoke to that. Like, you felt like that's what you were being told so much, you kind of started to believe it.
Yeah, I definitely did. And I started to think, you know, I'm just not tough anymore. And I lost my spark and I'm not cut out for this running thing anymore. So I think I just need to like hang it up and retire. And there have been so many times in the last 2 years I've been like, I just need to quit because this is not, I can't do this. So yeah, that kind of sucks. But then to your point, I've noticed now that I've seen so many doctors, there's a disconnect between internal medicine and nutrition, it feels like, and they don't quite understand, especially when you're like a high-level athlete, like how that makes the nutrition piece so much different. And the amount of times I heard from one doctor, she was like, made a joke that I, because I was in there and I was like, I feel so bad. And she was like, well, are you even, do you even have enough body fat to get a period? And I was like, why are we joking about this? Like, that's not funny to me. And I, if that's an issue, like, I want to fix it. I don't want to not get a period. And that's why I'm literally here seeing you, is to try and feel better because I feel sick. And you're saying that. So yeah, it's been kind of a eye-opening experience with the medical professionals.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that you've had that experience. And it is so hard. And I see this like with parents of young athletes who are dealing with reds or not having a period, they're dismissed, they're told it's normal. There are some fantastic medical practitioners out there who know about these things. But unfortunately, I do think the majority that athletes come into contact with, like, I have had a lot of doctors who didn't know what REDS was. And they actually, like, I was working with an athlete that they were seeing. They reached out to me to explain, like, what is that? Which I love that they did that. And I think, like, that's sharing things like this and educating people is helpful for everybody. But it's so frustrating when you are just being dismissed by the people that are supposed to be helping you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, I'm a world champion and they're still like, no, like, it's fine. You can miss your period. So I can't imagine being younger and or not having, I mean, I don't have special access to any doctors either. I've just had to kind of go through them and find the ones that work with me and for me. But yeah, I can't imagine being in high school and hearing that and how damaging that could be.
Absolutely. And obviously you never want to get diagnosed with something like Crohn's, but sometimes having like a name to put to what you've been experiencing is a huge relief. Did you find that when you got that diagnosis?
Definitely. And I felt so relieved that I felt guilty about like how happy I was to have a diagnosis, because like, yeah, you don't want this disease that can really like ruin people's lives. But also now I have a name and a treatment for it that's working well. I can get medicine for it. I don't have to just sit around like waiting for something to happen. So it's been, yeah, overall, I'm really glad I finally just have an answer.
Yeah, so for anyone listening who doesn't know what Crohn's disease is, what is Crohn's disease? What kind of symptoms do you experience and what does your treatment look like?
Yeah, so it's an IBD or an inflammatory bowel disease. Ulcerative colitis is also an IBD. Crohn's can be anywhere from your mouth to your anus. Mine is in the small intestine. Which is kind of lucky because I would hate to have it in your mouth. But basically it's just a lot of inflammation to the point that it starts destroying your tissue and your body. It's an autoimmune disease, so your body for whatever reason is attacking that healthy tissue. And for me, I didn't know this till recently, but your small intestine is responsible for absorbing a lot of nutrients. So unfortunately, if that's really inflamed and not working properly, you're not really absorbing much of anything, and digestion can get impaired. And for some people, if the disease progresses, they can have their intestines fully removed or get a J pouch. And yeah, there's just a lot of surgeries. You can get fistulas. It's kind of scary stuff. So I'm glad that we caught it before it has gotten to that point. And then as far as treatment goes, there's a lot of differing opinions out there on treatment for Crohn's, and I've had some wacky internet people offer me treatment suggestions that are just insane. But I'm going with the doctors right now on this one, and I get infusions every 8 weeks. It's an immunosuppressant, so it just calms my immune system down to stop it from attacking itself, and I go to the cancer ward in the hospital and sit there for 4 hours with an IV, and they'd give me an infusion, and then get to go home. And it's usually just a little tired for a day, and then I'm okay, which I've also feel pretty lucky about, because I've heard some people get much more fatigued for more than a day after the infusion, so I'm lucky that mine has just been a day. And yeah, for the rest of my life, I will have to do that unless they find a cure, which I'm hoping they will. But for the time being, we're getting infusions.
Wow, that's so great that they're helping and you're feeling some relief. I'm sure that's much anticipated.
And it wasn't like a light switch. It definitely ramped up and kind of took some time. But like I count the runs. I don't have to go to the bathroom, and how cool that is. Like, to not have to go for like a whole 2 hours, like, how fun. And I can't believe I thought that that was like normal or fine to be doing all the time.
Yeah, for sure. That's amazing. You're seeing relief in that. And I'm curious, did you have to make any dietary adjustments with having Crohn's disease?
A little bit. So I'd been gluten-free for a long time, because 10 years ago when they told me I had IBS, I was like, I don't know about that. And so I just tried like eliminating things, and I noticed gluten was like a pretty big trigger, but I never got a positive celiac test. So then it was always just kind of like, well, it's in your head. But now, knowing I have Crohn's, they're like, oh yeah, that's like a big inflammatory trigger. So if you feel like that helps you, like, don't eat gluten. So I don't eat gluten. But so far that's really been the only thing I've had to change. And then I eat kind of like a Mediterranean diet for the most part, so that's nice too. I was recommended to try like some of the elimination diets for Crohn's, but when I looked at them and looked at like how restrictive they were, there is no way I could do that and continue training through it, so I have not done that yet. But the medicine's working, so hopefully I don't have to.
Good. Yeah, that's always hard for athletes when they have to do any type of elimination. And what I try to encourage athletes, if you have to go through something like that, is think of it as a replacement, not an elimination. So if you're taking out gluten, you have to find a new source of carb to swap in, which I'm sure you are an expert at. You've been doing it for a long time.
Need more carbs. But yeah, it requires a little more thought, because you can't just go get a pastry after your run, which is sad. But
yeah. Unless you find a gluten-free bakery, which, yeah, I've heard there's a lot of really great ones out there.
Yes, I have my spots, so I know where to go.
Well, is there any advice you can give to somebody who is maybe going through kind of a medical journey of their own? They feel like they're being dismissed by the people that are supposed to be helping them. Any words of advice you could give them?
Continue advocating for yourself, even if it's hard, and even if you start to doubt what's going on, because it can go on for a long time. And like for me, after 2 years, I definitely started to think it is in my head and I am just making all of this up. But at the beginning, like, remember how you felt at the beginning, because at the beginning I was like, no, something is wrong and I know it, I need help. So try and keep that perspective, even though it is very difficult. And doctors should be working for you. So if you don't find one that you like, go find another one. I know insurance kind of makes that difficult, but it's like a therapist or a registered dietitian or anyone that you're working with. Like, not everyone is going to work for someone. So don't be afraid to try new people and get second and third and fourth opinions, and just keep asking for tests. And lastly, don't be afraid to educate yourself either. And don't just Google it. Like, go on like the National PubMed and like peer-reviewed studies. But I've printed out and brought plenty of studies to my doctors before, and it's nice too, because it might be something they haven't seen yet, and it's like a verified source, and then you can be educated too on what's going on.
Absolutely. All really great advice. And yeah, you know your body the best. So trust yourself. You know when something's wrong. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Moral of the story.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, lastly, something that you have also been very vocal about is that you don't even really call yourself a runner. You're more than just a runner. You actually started your own business, Wild Strides Paper Company, which I love. And I kind of did a similar thing with starting a business to give myself that flexibility. Tell us a little bit about your business. What inspired you to start that?
Yeah, it's been such a fun journey. I majored in civil engineering, so business was not my background. So it's been a fun learning on the fly experience too, but I had made a training log for myself in 2018, right when I graduated from college, and then a bunch of people were like, where'd you buy that? And I was like, oh, I made this, I should sell it to you. So I printed like a few hundred that year and sold them, and it went really well, so I just kept doing it and growing. And then last year we decided to make it fully Wild Strides Paper Co. and add more products. So we have stationery for athletes, like stickers and greeting cards and some other planner options. And it's just been really fun learning experience for me, fun way to connect with the running community outside of races and sponsors, and gave me the flexibility, like you said, to kind of be my own boss and not be so tied down to stuff. And then now it's just grown into where I have a business partner and she owns part of the business. And then we have a coaching collective and we have some collabs coming out later this summer. And it's just cool that like more people are getting involved now too. And we're creating like a community as well from my passion project. So it's been really fun and I've been really excited to share it with the world.
That's so amazing. And I just love that you're finding that balance and finding a way to stay involved in the sport, regardless of competing or training or results. That's also something with Fueling Forward that's been really important to me. I can stay connected to a community that I care about, but not necessarily, it doesn't matter what I'm doing with running. Like I can still be here, which takes some pressure off for me. It always did when I was competing.
Totally. Yeah. And I always have enjoyed that it takes pressure off and you can just be yourself and like be seen as part of the community, not like I feel like sometimes the racers get put up on pedestals and you're like separate from the running community almost, and this is a nice way to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And having that running and life balance seems like something that's been really important to you. So again, what could you speak to in terms of someone who might be struggling to find that balance? Why has that been so important to you?
I think I realized early on, I always have kind of said like running for me as an identity is relatively new compared to the rest of my life identities, because I didn't add running identity till I was 19, and I'd already developed like a lot about myself prior to that, so keeping that perspective too and not letting this new one like overtake everything that I was before I started running. But I would say find your own version of balance, because I've listened to plenty of other pro runners on podcasts talk about how committed they are and how that might look for them. And it might feel like restrictive to me, but to them that is balance. And I think it just goes to show there's like a lot of different ways to balance your life, and whatever feels right to you is what you got to do, even if that's not what Joe down the street is doing. I think that's okay too.
Totally. And like we were talking about earlier, like you don't have to run as many miles. Like you can do things differently in training. You can do things differently in your life. Everyone feels like their cup is filled in different ways. And it's important to figure out what fills your cup.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I will say like running does not always fill my cup. And I think that's okay to admit, even as like a pro runner. Like I think plenty of other people, I hope, feel that way.
Yes, I can certainly relate to that. A lot of times I feel like I was emptying my cup more than filling it with running, but in a good way, in a fun way. Yes, amazing. So what's next for you with running, with Wild Strides Paper Co? What's next for you?
For me with running, I'm kind of going down this ultra. It's 50K, so I hesitate to say fully ultra, but I did my first 50K a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And it was really fun, so this summer I'm going to keep doing that, and then I'm going to be representing Team USA at Worlds in September on the 50K team, which is new for me, because the last two times I've been, when I've won, it's been on the classic mountain team, so it's a new challenge and side quest, maybe to be full-time quest for me soon. And then with Wild Strides, we have some fun collabs coming out this summer with a couple pro athletes, which will be really cool. We have a rest day collection coming out, which I'm really excited about, because we love our rest days over at Wild Strides. Yeah. And yeah, we're just building our coaching collective too. So if people are looking for coaches, we're all female staff and coaches. So we're really excited about that too, because we really think there should be more coaches and female coaches in the coaching space. Amazing. Yeah. So hit us up if you need a coach.
Yes, definitely go check them out. I think that's so incredible. You just have such a versatile experience in the sport, and I love that you prioritize rest days and life balance. That's hugely important in coaches too, is to allow you to have that space to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Grayson. You have such an inspiring story, and I just love hearing your unique approach to the sport, and so glad that you were able to get that Crohn's diagnosis and find some treatment that's bringing you some relief.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me too. This has been so fun.
Yes, and I'd love to wrap up with the fun rapid fire questions.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, perfect. So the first one is, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
A banana or the Mott's fruit snacks.
Perfect. Love it. What would you pick for your last meal?
My mom's spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh, yum. That sounds amazing. What is your favorite dessert?
Okay, I don't really like dessert, but potato chips are my favorite dessert, and I consider that, well, it's like an all-day snack, but I do have them after dinner frequently too, as like a before bed snack.
Oh my gosh, not a dessert person. You might be the first one on the podcast. Really? Welcome.
Thank you.
That's so funny. Aisha is not a dessert person, and she's always looking for someone else. So there you go. Oh, you guys are in good company.
We can be buds. Yeah.
What is your least favorite food?
You're gonna hate me, but it's cake, I think. Like,
really?
I just really don't like cake. I like
pie.
What
don't you like about it?
I think it's too sweet and just, yeah, I'd rather have chips.
What do you do for your birthday? Do you have, like, a potato chip pile for your birthday cake?
Fortunately, but I'm a twin, so usually we do have to have, like, something to put, because my twin likes that. So we did pie this year, like strawberry rhubarb pie, and I can tolerate a piece of that.
That's amazing. Okay, yeah. So dessert. I was going to joke that dessert's your least favorite food, but I would have been right.
Yeah, you are correct.
Oh my gosh. If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Japan.
Oh, same.
Yeah, would That's love amazing. So much sushi.
Yes, so good. Mm-hmm. What is your go-to lazy meal?
There's two things. We had one the other night. There, Costco makes a great tikka masala, like, pre-made thing, and then you just have to make rice, Ooh. And it's, like, really good. Or Amazing. Just your classic, like, frozen pizza, but Costco has also a great cauliflower crust pizza.
Nice.
And I'll eat, like, the whole thing in one sitting. It's so good.
Perfect. Yeah. Amazing. Costco for the win. I gotta go check that out.
You gotta get to Costco.
And then last question, what's your favorite coffee or tea drink?
Probably just Americano. I have an Americano every morning, and it just really hits the spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a black coffee girl too, so I feel that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find you if they want to keep up with you?
On social media, I'm Racing Grayson. And then if you want to check out Wild Strides, it's wildstridespaper.com.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Grayson. We'll be cheering for you at Worlds this year in the 50K.
Thank you so much. It was good to talk to you.
You too. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Grayson Murphy. If you'd like to keep up with Grayson, you can find her on Instagram at Grayson Grayson, and you can also find Wild Strides Paper Company online at wildstrides.com. Next week will be a Q&A, so if you'd like to submit a question to be answered by me on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.